This episode is brought to you by exhaustion. Hello, everyone.
Oh, you poor thing.
Welcome to the Lex Files. I am Vexing Lex, and I have a very special guest with me today. He's a good friend of mine. He is a voice actor on Gone Wild Audio Gate, and he also has something going on YouTube. So this guy's pretty freaking famous. Ladies and gentlemen and friends, please welcome to the show, Off. Yay!
Hello. thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited. I've wanted to participate in a podcast kind of thing before, so I am very excited to be here. I am primarily a YouTuber, but I do like to post mostly comment on comment and listen to audios on Gone Wild Gay and Gone Wild Audio from time to time. So yeah, hello.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate it. And I'm so happy I finally got to talk to you because you are actually the first voice actor that was primarily on YouTube rather than on Reddit. Yeah. And I'd like to know what's the general difference? What separates YouTube work from Reddit work?
To be clear, first of all, I primarily consider myself an ASM artist first, only because I haven't actually gotten that much into voice acting work. But yes, so the most major difference between YouTube and Reddit is the fact that you have to really advertise yourself on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
On Reddit, I feel like it's a lot. And I do apologize for my dog in the background. I don't think it's coming up on Discord, but
it's okay.
It might be coming up on the recording.
It's fine. I have motorcycles outside. I have people. undesirable noises during recording, so it's fine.
Her name is Tara. Tara?
Hey, Tara.
Can you not, please? I will provide puppy pictures for later. But see, she's really spoiled. She got into the habit of eating not one, not two, but three separate dinners. Even though she doesn't need it at all. She is the tiniest. She's not tiniest, but she's a small dog. Anyway, dogs later. So, YouTube versus Reddit. So, on YouTube, you really have to... for both, you definitely need to have a brand. But on YouTube, it needs to be, number one, like, a visually recognizable brand. So, like, thumbnails.
Right.
Maybe title style, your profile photo, your banner, maybe, like, a channel theme. Those all really need to be there, be consistent. And that's the other thing, consistency. So, if you're not uploading consistently, not only will your audience... But also definitely the algorithm is going to forget about you.
I see.
And that's the fun part, the algorithm.
Oh, God. I hear that word mentioned with very little respect. Like with every YouTuber, it's like, ugh, this algorithm, screw that.
This whole algorithm business. Cause it's either gonna work in your favor, like you can make it work in your favor, or it's gonna completely screw you over. So for viewers who may not know me, I started ASMR on YouTube in September of 2020, and about halfway through, the two-third way through of 2021, my channel got demonetized, which...
Oh my god.
Good fun. but the thing that YouTube obviously won't tell you is that when you get demonetized, all of your videos get flagged. And essentially, YouTube is never going to, or is extremely unlikely to, recommend your content to anyone ever again. And so what I had noticed was my views, like new subscribers per day per month, revenue, and even patronage was steadily decreasing, you know, here or there. So whereas I used to get, you know, a good video would, you know, do like 20k views. Eventually it was like a good video would do like 2000 views. And you could see the difference because, you know, you can see all of your analytics on YouTube. YouTube recommending your content, you know, 50% of your viewership coming from YouTube itself recommending your content to other people. Versus like now it's like on the old channel, it's like 1%, 2%. So that's like the phenomenon of being like shadow banned. And that's where like the bitterness against the algorithm comes from, because it's like, well, I got demonetized because my content wasn't advertiser friendly. Which, fair. but because of that, you know, my views, everything else suffered. And then as a result, you know, it doesn't have the best effects on your mental health and things like that. That's all in comparison to Reddit, where I guess this is the whole like moniker of Reddit is like, everything is people powered. You know, if your content is good, people are going to upvote it and more people are going to see it. If your content isn't so good, it might not be seen as by as many people.
Right.
Of course, you know, titling and on Gwag especially, having enough tags helps. People don't understand what your content is, what it's about. But you can have zero followers, zero karma, and your first audio can still do really well. But on YouTube, it's really difficult to do that. Now, I did restart my channel, literally, 3 weeks ago. And because it was, at that point where I was, I got demonetized and then remonetized, but nothing was the same. So I made a new account, and I started posting on that. The first video went it's the best video that I've had in 9-10 months. I think at the moment it's sitting at 70k or 75k views or something in ridiculously insane. And that was because I could bring over 500 people from my old channel to the new one, which, you know, it was at 26,000 subscribers before, and then the new one is already at 5.5k. sorry, I hope it doesn't look like I'm bragging about the numbers. It's just
no, it's... not at all. This is a very personal experience for you, and I think if you don't mind me interrupting for a bit, I think it helps people understand the kind of work it takes to enter and survive in a platform as enormous as YouTube and competitive, and compared to things like Reddit, which is not necessarily smaller than YouTube, but it has a very different viewership.
Absolutely. On YouTube, I mean, they're both similar in that, you know, you're both very much spoiled for choice. So many fantastic VAs on both Reddit and YouTube. I feel like Reddit, you're more likely to find a niche that you're looking for specifically, especially with the NSFW related things. But even then, on YouTube, you know, whatever that statistic is of 4,000 hours uploaded every minute or whatever, you know, ridiculous statistic it is. It is competitive. But that's what I mentioned about consistency as well just before. The thing that's really helped my new channel is the fact that I'm uploading every 2 to 3 days right before this podcast. Lex knows I had to delay this by 40 minutes because I was just recording audios plural, because I recorded one safe for work one and then one not safe for work on for the Patreon. And it is a lot of work. I have 50 minutes of, oh god, yeah, I have 15 minutes, 45 minutes of audio I need to get through at some point. it is, yeah, I mean, because it's already been 3 days since my last audio. So after this podcast, I gotta go and work. I gotta go and edit.
Goodness. I appreciate you taking the time to do this, by the way.
Like, I absolutely wanted to do this. I was like, there's no way I'm going to, like, reschedule and then keep pushing it back. Like, this is going to happen. But, yeah, the thing about consistency is that the algorithm really likes consistency. So making, like, 10 to 15 minute videos, like, every day is a bit much, but every 2 to 3 days... really boosts your channel, I find, or is what I've noticed, at least with myself. Mm-hmm. Really boosts your channel, and then once you've sort of gotten through, like, a certain point to, like, where your channel is pretty recognizable in the ASMR community, I would say that's like 10 to 15k subscribers is where it's like you're not a small ASMR channel anymore. That's okay. When you can start to, like, slow down a little bit, because people know a little bit who you are, and they know sort of what your content is about. And at that point, yeah, you can start uploading, like, a little bit less frequently, like every 3 to 4 days to every week or twice a week. And people will still, like, click on it because they know who you are. They recognize you by your thumbnails, things like that. Whereas on Reddit... sure, if you upload every 3 months, people probably won't remember who you are. But, you know, if you have, like, a stressful week or if something happens and you can't upload for a little bit, there's no algorithm that's gonna, like, prevent you or that's actively working against you from, getting however many upvotes in a certain period.
Okay. So there seems to be somewhat of a difference between the communities in Reddit and on YouTube. Like, who do you find to be more accommodating? I mean, this is not to throw any shade against either side, but who do you find responds to you more? Mm. Is it your followers on YouTube? Is it because of your experience with them?
That's a good question. No matter where you go, you're always going to get your most loyal / most vocal supporters are always going to be behind, like, they're always going to be behind your back, no matter what. If you're busy with exams, if something, you know, stressful in life has gotten in the way, they're always going to reassure you, to tell you that everything's going to be okay, that, to take all the time that you need to rest and recover, and to take time for yourself. And I earnestly believe that that's true, but this comes back to the thing about consistency, where it's like, if you aren't posting consistently on YouTube, it's not going to show your videos to people. And given that majority of your audience is going to be people who just, you know, youtube.com, and then that's just, like, the homepage. They don't even go to the subscription box. They just see what's up on the homepage. If YouTube isn't even putting your videos there, they're not going to see it. Even if they are fans, even if they're people who really care about you, and that's no fault of their own. That's YouTube's thing.
So this means your listeners would have to actively go to your profile or search for you before they even see you, in case that algorithm works against
and
you.
And I can demonstrate it with the shadow band. So the old channel and the new one, where on the old one, the video, the views I get is, like, now after being shadow banned, is, like, 60-65% of the views come from people who are subscribed, which is a bit high compared to the new channel, where 90% of the views come from people who are not subscribed. So I'll rephrase that. 10% of the views come from people who are subscribed.
Oh.
So...
Okay.
Yeah. That's so a huge difference. It is pretty crazy how... But I mean, it sort of makes sense if you think about how maybe you personally or how you think people generally might consume YouTube. They, you know, open YouTube and they just see what's there. They click the first video that looks most interesting to them. Because, you know, I don't think people would have, like, their YouTube subscription box, like, bookmarked if they use desktop. And especially if they just use the app on their phone. You click on the app and the first thing you get is your homepage. You have to click a button to go to your subscription page. So if you're just being presented with your homepage, YouTube is going to present what you think you're going to click on the most. And then you click on that video. Cool, it's interesting. It might not be interesting. But again, it's not showing you your subscription feed after that. It's showing you what else you think you would watch. Whether you've never heard of that channel in your life, whether it's a channel you're not subscribed to, but you've watched like 10 of their videos like the past 2 weeks, anything like that. So the fact of the matter is that people don't consume YouTube by using their subscription feed, because that's not necessarily what gets people hooked onto the app for the longest amount of time, which is the reality of it. And the same is true for TikTok. I think it's important to talk about TikTok, even though there's definitely like a bunch of voice actors on TikTok, but just in general, the first thing you're presented with on TikTok is your For You page, which is just the equivalent of like YouTube Home. You have to actively click on a button to find the people that you follow. And even then, it's a curated feed. It won't show you absolutely everything from every single person you follow. It'll show you all of the TikToks from people that you're engaging the most with. And then even after that, you have to click on like one or two other buttons to go like searching for something. So with YouTube and TikTok, it's all about like getting you hooked onto the app and like showing you what you think you're gonna like. Whereas with Reddit, that's a bit less the case.
Yeah. It seems like with how you talk about it, it's really dependent on like the habits of your listeners and how they tend to view you and respond to you. Like, you know, that's why people keep saying like and subscribe. hit that notification bell. It's such a send off to every to every video.
It's really funny or audio that you that's say on, that that's on because, YouTube. Like, I just tested it on one video. I put right at the start. I just said, before this audio starts, I'd just like to mention 90% of you are not subscribed. So feel free to hit that subscribe button. That's it. It had 10,000 views, and by then 200 people had subscribed, compared to the previous video, which had like 30,000-40,000 views, and like 100 people had subscribed. It really makes a difference. Oh my it's God. So
it's really bizarre does to help. Like, to
yeah,
some
sometimes
degree.
You just forget. And like the nice thing about Reddit is that like it doesn't really matter how many followers you have. It's a nice. It's definitely a nice metric to have and to see, but, you know, people following or not doesn't really affect your content doing well or people being able to see it.
Yeah, like as long as you're producing something that people like, even if it isn't as consistent, people will still pay attention to you and it, like, quote-unquote subscribe. Although it feels like there's a bigger chance for monetization on YouTube. Is this the case with you? I mean, if you are, you know, promoting anything for your creative.
That's always the enterprise. Funny thing about monetization on YouTube and TikTok, is that it pays like crap. Like, to be 100% honest, yeah, like, I'm more than happy to be open about, really? Like, how much I make, well, how much I made off YouTube. So, at the moment, I earn $1.14 per 1,000 views. So, and it's like an, it's like a rough estimate. So it's not exactly that per video, but essentially if a video gets like 10,000 views, that's like $10. Wait, and so
that's not a lot.
No.
By no stretch of the imagination.
That's, I mean, yeah, that's kind of just like the kind of shitty thing about it, isn't it? Is YouTube keeps like, oh, it's a bit, it's ridiculous. How much do they, YouTube keeps, oh, I don't remember off the top of my head. YouTube monetization cut. I didn't double check.
Oh my.
45%.
This is quite a deep cut for any, for
is what YouTube keeps.
People who 45%? Christ, yeah. In the basket. That is if you don't mind me saying, that's a complete
and disservice utter, question mark?
That's bullshit, man.
Yes. So
it's bullshit. That's what it is. So, okay. I'd like to ask you this now. How are you able to create such consistent audio creations? And where do you get your ideas from? Is this, do you have like a pool of ideas and audio that you stash and create and then just post when you're ready? Or does it come to you in a more organic,
yeah, that's a really good question,
impulsive
so time. I'd love to say that it's all that I'm just like 10 trillion IQ and like all of these ideas just like sitting in my head all the time, but it's really not the case.
Okay,
like when I first started YouTube, like, and even like again on the new channel, I just had this like anxiety of like, oh my god, how am I gonna like keep up with this, like how am I just gonna like keep creating audios, because like per like my videos will go anywhere from like 15 to like 25 minutes. That's anywhere from like 1500 words to like 2500 words, like for a script. And like for the record, my assignments at university are all 2000 words. And I only have to do one every like 8 weeks, every like 10 weeks. So I was initially like really worried about that. What I found helped was like thinking about it, not spending all of my spare time thinking about YouTube and like, oh, what's going to be the next video, but like, you know, a couple minutes here and there, if you know, downtime between activities, or just, you know, sometimes you'll do something idly like cooking or taking a shower, you'll start to your mind will start to wander. I think part of being a YouTuber is letting that mind wandering go towards your audios. So, yeah, like, one thing I started doing recently is, because on the new channel, I want there to be like characters that people, you know, characters with names, with lives, hobbies and interests. So I'm starting to think, you know, what are some things that this character might say in a certain situation? And at least you just have like a note. I have like on my notes app, I'll write down like,
okay,
oh, you know, what did I put most recently? Oh, one is like, I have like a slow burn series with like a delinquent. So it's like a childhood friend and like a delinquent. And I was, ooh, like, you know what would be really cute for him to say? Much, much later. Not anywhere in like the next week or 2 weeks, probably like 3-4 months down the line. Is for him to say, I'm not gonna lie, every time I see you I get butterflies in my stomach. Mm-hmm. Hey, don't laugh. It's true. I was...
Oh, yeah.
The other thing as well.
That is anime levels.
You definitely get a lot of tropes, especially in right ASMR. You definitely get a lot of tropes from anime, from comics and stuff like that. Yeah, for sure. I think like, I mean,
I know,
a lot of these terms like tsundere, bully, or like yandere. I hate saying with an Aussie accent, like tsundere, a werewolf, or like, you know, yandere, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. Those are all like Japanese terms, right? And they're tropes you get in slice of life and romance anime.
Mm-hmm.
Famous yandere simulator. Yes. An anime is based off of anime tropes. And one of my creative friends, actually the person who got me into making ASMR, yeah. He's never watched anime in his life.
Okay.
But he knows all these terms like tsundere and yandere, and like kudere, okay. And what like all the deres, through ASMR specifically, through like prolific consumption of ASMR. Yeah. So yeah.
That's incredible. Mm. So they were introduced, yes, to a completely niche culture without even going
absolutely
through the culture. Like the main culture.
And that links to like another part of it as well, which is like
just because
all of our titles are like rehashes of each other. It's like just like the content that's different. So you definitely get a lot of ideas listening to other people's work. There's that Steve Jobs quote that I don't really agree with, but that I see the sentiment in. It's like good artists copy, great artists steal, or something. Let me not misquote Steve Jobs. Good artists... I know he's dead. Oh, mm-hmm. Good artists borrow, great artists steal.
He's dead.
Oh, no, Picasso said that.
Yeah.
Picasso said that. So there's that quote, which... Oh, yeah, again, very dead. I like the idea of
also
borrowing
dead
ideas. I know, like the idea of stealing ideas. Although they're kind of what it is. That's kind of what the essence is, right? You mm-hmm. are a content creator. You're wondering, okay, what video should I make? Well, why don't I go see what's trending? And you see all of these audios that are like trapped in the closet with your ex bully. I've seen that on Reddit before. I know that's not just a YouTube thing.
God.
But I think I know... I think there's like one or two people who like popularized that trope. Just everyone else kind of like follows along with that. Mm-hmm. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with, you know, hopping on a trend. Because the fun part is about making it your own and making it... you know, what reason do you have, or what ability do you have to make that trendy concept your own and something that viewers would like and would want to come back to listen to again at some point in the future? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's...
mm-hmm.
Originality is... I've heard somebody say that originality is dead, and you're left with innovating on an already existing concept or movement, and it's up to you, the creator, to make it personal. And I feel like that's mostly true, because thanks to the internet, we've created so much, and we've allowed a great deal of our lives to live solely online, and that therefore we learn much faster than most people would learn.
Yeah, for sure.
This allows us to create much faster than before the age of information. Have you found yourself going into more or into specific tropes or specific like you said, personas, characters, or shall we say, quote unquote, voices for your audio?
Yeah, for sure. Like, number one, sort of like with this new channel, what my kind of plan was to rely on certain tropes, or at least very, I don't want to say clickbaity, but like there's always some element of clickbait in successful YouTube videos. But yeah, certain attractive videos, shall we say, to build up an audience, and from there sort of, and hopefully like along the way, establish what it is that's like unique about my content. So I've got like, the very first audio was like pinned down and tied up by a werewolf.
I remember this. I've seen this. Delicious.
And you'll be happy to know that I just recorded. The reason I was late was because I was recording the sequel to that.
Oh, well, hello.
So there's that one, which is like super, I don't want to say it's not raunchy, but it is a little bit like, you know, clickbaity and like, and that one was like super on the mark. It's the most successful video on my channel to date. Then
there's, good reason.
Thank you. But then you can sort of see there were like two videos that didn't do like as amazingly, and that's still an attempt at like the kind of like clickbaity stuff. So there's like Hot Holiday Cuddles, that was like an attempt to get onto like the Christmas stuff, because it is hot here in Australia, it's the middle of summer, but it was like meant to be like warm Christmassy cuddles, cute. It was horrible recording that on like a 30 degree day, but anyway. But that one didn't do like as fantastically. And then there's also like Catboy Boyfriend Demands Cuddles and Kisses, which also didn't do that fantastically, even though it was a redo of a very successful audio on my previous channel as well. So sometimes it's hit or miss. But I definitely have others where there's like specific lore, and by proxy I do specific accents. So there's like a fantasy world that I have on my YouTube channel that has like a prince and like a tsundere werewolf. So for those, I put on a early modern Shakespearean accent. Early modern English, which is also a Shakespearean original pronunciation accent.
Nice.
And that one's really fun to do. It does get a bit of odd comments sometimes because people don't completely understand why I'm speaking funny. Sometimes people think I'm Irish. But those are the sort of like voices that like you sort of kind of have to put on to differentiate your characters, because you can definitely get away with just doing like, I don't want to say generic, but it is pretty like, you know, ASMR channels where there's no specific character, it's just each individual scenario are completely separate from one another. You can absolutely do that, and then you don't have to vary your voice at all because there's no specific character. But yeah, I wanted to ask you before as well, actually, this was sort of on the topic of like getting ideas for stuff. Sometimes, like personally, I sometimes worry that like my NSFW content just sounds the same, because like personally, like I don't work with a script for NSFW audios, so I mean, that's just personally I worry about it, it's like sounding similar. How do you like differentiate your content, because you make a lot of audios as well.
And most of them are very dirty. I confess. Mm-hmm. I think I have the unique position of having real life experience when it comes to sexual, you know, sexuality and intimacy and let's say romance, or at least the ideas of these things and the application of them, because I've mentioned in several, in like some audio in the past or written them in the description, that I used to be a sex worker. So there's plenty of material for me to work with, because I've met with people who were very shy but wanted to experience something more intimate and more personal. I've spoken to people who wanted to be more aggressive or authoritative or more assertive, and I would have to tweak myself and my responses to them in a way that would please them, because if they're not happy, I won't get a repeat customer. And word of mouth spreads very quickly, particularly before the internet was, you know, accessible the way it is now. So it's not completely impossible or rare for me to read a script when it comes to doing audio, both say for work and NSFW, but I like using my imagination and my previous experiences when it comes to creating audio. Obviously, there is a trend with me specifically when it comes to it. Like, the himbo is one of the most popular.
That was such a good one. That was so good.
buddy, I gotta tell you, man, I had no fucking idea that that's what was going to happen, but it did. And then there is, of course, the daddy audio, and then the dominant audio. So they tend to be the most popular ones and the ones that get the most responses. But I also like to do things that are a bit more niche, like catboy audios are rare. Sensual slow burn audios are rare. Fantasy audios are rare too, and I like making them just because I know that there's somebody out there that's in need of it. And I, like you, I try to be spontaneous and improvise my scripts, or rather my recordings. I try not to follow anything too strict. I don't even have a script in front of me, and that's it seems to work. So I'm thankful for that.
I think it works very well. Yeah,
it's nice. It's nice of you to say that. Thank you.
It is interesting you brought up making audios you think that people need. I definitely think that, sorry, gotta clear my throat. I definitely think that, that's something that I want to do again at some point, because on YouTube especially, it's so easy to get caught up with the analytics, and you see that one particular type of video just doesn't do well, and you're like, nah, you're done.
Never again.
You're done. like, literally, you mentioned Catboy, and I was like, tucks hair behind ear. My, you know, the Catboy video that I did immediately got demonetized, so that's probably not going to appear on my channel anytime soon. Damn. Even though it was like completely safe for work. I think, I don't know, there was like a little bit of whining in there. I don't know, but I immediately thought of an audio I did where it was teaching your best friend how to shave, and specifically it was for trans male listeners. And that audio on the previous channel, it didn't do particularly well, but I got the script looked over at by a couple of my trans followers on Twitter. It first started out with like me tweeting the idea. It's like, hey, I want to make an audio, you know, specific for my trans male listeners. Is this anything that would interest people? And then it sort of got through. It was like, okay, shaving sounds like a good idea. I wrote the script. I had a couple people look at it. They gave me some fantastic suggestions. And yeah, the video did fine. It didn't do amazingly, but just the sheer number of comments of people who were like, thank you, like, this was just what I needed, it was, you know, super heartwarming. And I think that's, like, one of the really nice aspects of being a content creator, is that you can do something that to you isn't really a big deal. Like, you know, you and I both create, like, dozens of audio per year.
Yeah.
You know, not like, yeah, just over a couple of weeks. It's like a whole year deal. But it really does make the difference for some people. And I think that's an aspect of content creation that really speaks to me. And like I mentioned with, like, the YouTube things, like the algorithm, it's, you know, you sometimes you just got to remind yourself that it's not always about the algorithm.
Yeah.
And that's definitely, like, a nicer part about Reddit, is that, like, if you put in effort into an audio and people like it, it's gonna do well. Most likely.
with some luck.
You always need luck. Unfortunately, you always need a little bit of luck, with both platforms. But, yeah, I think, I don't know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, when I first heard your audio, and it was the werewolf one, I just thought randomly, like, you know, let's listen to this one, because I usually do the tying up, but you're familiar with you're familiar with that, so I thought I would listen to you. And you had one of the most unique voices that I've heard. And that's not to say that other voices are common. It's just that your voice called out to me. And I thought, this is a gentle person who's taking on a much more aggressive and feral role. And it surprised me how effective it was, because of that, like, the contrast in the things that you were saying and how you were actually sounding. This was my first reaction to you. Like, oh wow, this is like the fluffiest werewolf in the entire fucking den.
yeah, it's really funny you mentioned that. Like, and that's the thing that surprised me as well, because I was like, before I started YouTube, I was like, there's no way not a single person on this planet would ever want to listen to my voice. Sure, there's insecurities in there, in that comment, but even, like, what I think is objectively speaking, and I sincerely apologize for my dog, can we pause for 1 minute?
It's okay,
I just need to check
okay
on her.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Pausing now. Yes, and we're back. So I was saying before that, okay, personal insecurities aside, objectively speaking, I don't have a deep voice. I don't have, like, a sexy, silky, smooth voice. So it's like, why the hell would anyone want to listen to me? But much to my surprise, even though I had no idea what I was doing on my first channel, it did well. And I was really surprised, and I say was as in, like, 2-3 weeks ago, and I was thinking about this stuff, because, you know, I published this Catboy Demands, Cuddles and Kisses. I was like, I have a gentle voice. I don't have I can make my voice a lot higher pitched if need be. Would I not be popular as, like, the subby kind of trope? But it's just not what people want. And, I don't know why that I can make, like, you know, slightly more characters with, like, a more dominant edge, and they still do well, because that doesn't fit my voice at all. it's just something I personally, I just can't, wrap my head around it. Why people like it?
It is strange, though, right?
Yeah.
It's strange and funny that somehow you think it's not going to work, but then suddenly somebody comments, "Your voice is perfect. I needed this. Thank you so much for creating this audio." And it's nice. It's a nice feeling.
Yeah, no, it really is. It really is amazing. You know, getting nice comments in general is really nice. But the thing I've sort of come to realize begrudgingly, because it means I have to accept it for myself as well, is that there is a voice for everybody. Even if you personally, dear audience member, think that your voice, even if you don't like it yourself or you don't think other people are going to like it, there really is a voice for everyone. And yeah, if that's one thing you want to take away from today, is that, nice. Yeah, content creation, if you can find your niche, and you can make it work, it can be a really good thing, and you can help out a lot of people.
And help is such an important word here, because whenever I talk about audio, like audio erotica or erotic audio to people who've never heard of it, they automatically assume that it's just porn, but you listen to it rather than watch it.
Yeah.
And while there are similarities and some themes do cross over, I feel like when you do audio erotica, it's the erotica that matters rather than the pornography of it. Because it touches on something that's so personal. Because
absolutely,
listening to something is very different from watching something. And listening to it being told to you triggers your imagination in a more intimate way, rather than rather than just watching two people fornicating on screen.
And that's my favorite part about it, is that, yeah, it's in the second person. You're referring to you, the listener.
Yeah.
You mentioned before about using your own personal experiences to create your audios. For me, it's the opposite. For me, it's the things I've... It's a mix of the things that I want to have done to me and the things that I want to do. It's up to the audience members to guess which is which. But it's just a difference. Like, I haven't been in, like, a relationship in real life before. My experience, if you can call it that, is just very, very surface level hookups. So, you know, for me as a content creator, the original reason I kind of set out about it was because I wanted to make more of the content that I wanted to see. And what I wanted to see was, stuff that's inclusive. I make mostly M for A and M for M audios, but a lot of it is, yeah, stuff that I wish I could have experienced, you know, high school romance, or even a prince/werewolf whisking you away.
Wouldn't we all?
I know, wouldn't that be great? So it's really interesting.
That'd be the life, man.
It's really interesting that you've mentioned, like, that intimacy, because, yeah, it just feels... Sorry, that you mentioned that the erotica part of it, because, yeah, it's that intimate feeling that it's you personally that's there. You can let your imagination run wild, you can have them look however you want, and that's definitely a super appealing part about the process.
What a beautiful thing to experience something that is given by... I mean, let's be honest, we are strangers in the broad sense of the word, and we develop a very different and unique relationship with our listeners. They don't know who we are intimately, and they'll, you know, it's rare that people get to see the people that they idolize and that they listen to. But there seems to be this collective joy when it comes to, like, hey, Off is my comfort VA. Like, I listen to him when I feel when I feel lonely or when I'm angry and I want to calm myself down. How much do you interact with your audience? Do you find yourself in a good place with them, or do you try to distance yourself?
That's a very good question.
Dun dun dun.
that's always the difficult part, isn't it? I see every single comment on my YouTube channel. I very rarely miss a single one, which is good in some ways. It's bad in others.
People have something to say.
Yes. The thing I like about ASMR is it's small, and hate comments do not fly under the radar. You can't really leave a nasty comment and it go unnoticed. I think sometimes when people leave a nasty comment, they're sort of not expecting the creator to see it. I've definitely heard about people who, you know, creators who'd had like a nasty comment left to them, and they don't leave a snarky response. They just say, hey, that wasn't cool. And then the person, you know, immediately replies like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't think you would see that. I just had a horrible day, blah, blah, blah. I'm super lucky that, you know, majority of my comments are super nice. I definitely see a bit of odd ones from time to time and, you know,
yeah,
just ignore those ones.
Why does he have a funny accent? Is he Irish?
Is he British? Is he Irish? It's never Australian. Someone asked if I was Canadian. I was like, is this a Canadian accent? That one is a new one. Shout out to that, because they thought I was Canadian because I used Celsius, not Fahrenheit, in an audio. And I thought that was great.
Oh my.
I was just like, yeah, you know, the rest of the world, it's just America that uses Fahrenheit. And like, oh, I didn't know that. And I was like, mm-hmm. To answer your question properly, I absolutely, maybe a bit too often check my comments. I have my Discord server, which I see, like, it's not the most active. You know, there's messages every day, in multiple channels for sure. And I see, like, most of it. I don't interact, every single day. But I'm definitely on and active on my Discord server. Same on my Twitter. I've had times where I'm like, okay, I have to scale this back. My dog. I've had times where I absolutely have to, like, scale it back. You know, delete Twitter, take a break from my Discord server, which I'm doing, like, right now. Just because, yeah, sometimes being online too much isn't the greatest. I do have a question that I'd like to spin on you.
Okay.
It's similar to this about, like, interacting with your community. Are you familiar with parasocial interactions or parasocial relationships?
To a degree, yeah.
So, what would you say your experience with that is?
I like the idea of developing an online relationship with friends and romantic partners. And I understand, and I do assert to them that this is very different from when we finally see each other. Because the things that we share online are part of our online culture. It's the personality that we have cultivated from years of exposure to the internet, even before we meet the person that we like with you, or with, let's say, with Pup or with Gray or Tate. the Lex that they meet is, of course, very much the online Lex. And while that's not saying that we are being disingenuous, you know, because I'd like to think that the good people that I talk to are relatively the same energy from, you know, when we meet in person, there is a difference. And when I talk to people online and I tell them that I, you know, especially if it's another Filipino who is a listener, and you know, they say that I want to talk to you, I want to meet you in person, and like, hey, I want to buy you some I want to buy you a coffee or whatever. I tell them that just to let you know, things are different from when we meet up, if we do meet up, because I have only narrated sexual intimacy with you. We have never done that in real life. Again, we are creating a perfect world setting where the things that we do sexually do not have consequences, except for the emotional ones that happen when people listen. There's talk about hygiene and safety and security and spending an entire hour just fucking douching, you know?
Yeah.
It's a different world when it includes the body.
Absolutely.
But that isn't to say that it's fake.
Mm.
It's not. There is a lot of truth built on it. Built on the imagination of the listener and the veracity of one's own experience.
Exactly. And what you present is curated as well, right?
Yes. Yeah. It has to be curated because there are things that I might say to a person in real life that I can only say to that person. But I can't say it online because it's too personal. Mm. Or it's too specific. Like not even my most personal listeners will be able to appreciate it.
Mm.
So I have to dial things back, or I have to amp it up sometimes.
Mm.
And it can be difficult for listeners and even myself to comprehend that a strong and intimate personal online relationship isn't necessarily automatically transferred. In the same way that when you moved from one YouTube profile to the next, not everybody went there.
Mm. Oh yeah. I can't do math right now. Less than 10%. Less than,
okay.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I mean, less than 5%.
It's a weird correlation, or it's a weird comparison, but I feel like that's how it would.
That's how it feels like. Easy
to feel. Yeah, that's how it feels like and visualize.
Absolutely. And it's.
Oh, no, you first.
And I was just going to say it's definitely the same with ASMR, especially because it's on a much more emotional level. The way that parasocial relationships can form is honestly a little bit scary sometimes. You absolutely have to create and maintain boundaries with people. As much as it's, you know, it really is like we're just two regular guys doing stuff on the internet, and that's great, but we're still content creators, and people have to be able to appreciate that, and for the most part they do. But there are times where you have to put your foot down and say,
yeah,
look, I really appreciate it, but we're not a thing. Like, we're, you know, in ASMR, sometimes it gets to the point where it's like, you know, you might start to feel like you really, really know the content creator because, you know their favorite color, you know, like what their favorite snacks are and things like that. But it's a little bit different from that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I cut you off before, I think.
Oh, no, it's okay. I was just going to add, I mentioned this to a different VA. It was Pup, and we were discussing it. But I think it bears repeating in this situation. We may be public figures, but we are not public property. We have a personal life.
Absolutely.
We have our needs that the listener might not comprehend or understand, even if we say it directly to them.
Absolutely.
Ultimately, what we do in the audio is creating a space that is only a space. It is not life itself. It can be lifelike, it can be realistic and believable. And
it can be a safe space.
Yeah, it can be safe. But the internet is a lawless, terrifying,
sometimes
wild landscape. And sometimes disgusting landscape. So we have to understand that it is not a perfect simulacra of life.
Absolutely.
We have to live with a person before we can say we know them.
And that's definitely where the disconnect comes from. Because, you can definitely get to know someone online. You can be their friend. But it really requires a lot of effort and a lot of time for it to change from being just an online friend to being a friend. That's just a natural part of it, really, when, like we said before, you're presenting this very curated view of yourself. Sometimes even not even of yourself, like
of a character that you've created.
Of a character or a persona that you've created.
This is what new and upcoming VA should understand, and hopefully the listeners will also be able to recognize as a personal, let's just say a personal reminder to everybody that's listening. We are people, and we things will not always be to your favor when it comes to the things you listen to and the person you listen to.
Yeah, I do feel obligated to say that almost like the vast majority of people are fantastic. It really is just a very, very few handful of bad eggs. But I do have to think about the time when, on my Discord server, because I'm so active, people feel like they know me and they feel like they can push certain boundaries that are like, no, you really, really cannot do that. And I know for a fact that if you're on a different server with a different content creator that you listen to just as much, you wouldn't say that to them. Sometimes it's just those like one or two, little incidents that kind of stick with you for a while. And that's when you get us reminding everybody else. Just
calm the fuck down. calm your tits.
Yes, calm your tibbies. I do have to say, I love, because I don't know. I'm a bit of an attention whore. I love really thirsty comments. I think they're great.
We're not telling you to stop. We're just saying keep your thirst in the comments and not in the personal life of the person you're listening to.
Exactly.
With that note, I have to cut this conversation off because I try not to make it last too long. The thing is, this feels like a prompt to do this again in the future.
We have
especially
to.
Yes, please. I find myself compelled to do this repeatedly with the other VA that I've spoken to, and I would love to speak to you again.
Yes.
Now, other than the things that you've already said, and I know a lot of it is directed towards your listeners, do you have anything to say to, like, an up-and-coming VA that knows that they've got something good going on, they just don't know how to start it?
Ooh. Before I started, I thought that this was the most stupid advice you could possibly give someone, but it really, like, until you start, you don't know. So you have to start. You can keep making all of these excuses like, yeah, I'm going to get better at script writing. I'm going to get better at editing. I'm going to go sign up for voice acting classes. I'm going to get a job and buy a new microphone. No, none of that. You have to start. And I'm waving my hands about everyone. Unfortunately, you cannot see, but I'm pointing at you, dear listener. I'm waving my hands and I'm making like a decisive movement.
That for dramatic effect.
For dramatic effect, that if you don't start, it will not happen. And before I was a content creator, I was like, that is the stupidest fucking advice I've ever heard in my life. Of course I'm going to start at some point. Well, then when are you going to start? Oh, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm just still figuring things out. When are you going to have things figured out? Oh, well, you know, I'm just doing blah, blah, blah. You end up making excuses after excuse. You start delaying things. And I don't know, maybe sometimes people don't suffer from executive dysfunction like I do. That's not an official disease. It's just a nice way of describing. Sometimes you have start with you have difficulty with starting things, and that's perfectly fine. But you got to make a start. Sure, the first couple attempts are probably gonna be crap, but that's okay. I listened to the first audio I ever made.
Oh, dear.
Oh, God, it was horrible. I didn't have a pop filter. It was like a $20. It was a $20 microphone off of Amazon, and I used it until I had 2,000 subscribers. I still cannot believe that, and I'm acutely aware of the time, I still cannot believe that I used such a shit microphone, because I'm so indecisive. I hit 1,000 subscribers. My promise to myself was, if I hit 1,000 subscribers, I'll take YouTube seriously and I'll buy a new microphone. You know, the $150 Blue Yeti. I was like, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'll get it. Because I had a small amount of income at that point.
Okay.
So I was like, yeah, I'll get a new microphone. And 1,000 subscribers came and passed, and then it was finally 2,000, and I was like, okay, I'll buy a microphone. So yeah, the first couple of audios, they might not be fantastic, and that's perfectly fine. No one's expecting you to come out of the woodworks with a $2,000 microphone set up, you know, XLR microphone, all that jazz. You don't need it to start with. You learn the audio editing as you go along by listening to other people and realizing as you become a content creator, unfortunately, you're going to start analyzing other people's content. You'll learn better script writing. You'll learn better improvisation. It all comes with practice. But if you don't start, you're never going to get that practice. So,
and there you go.
Yes. I hope that explains the piece of advice to just get started well enough that you don't roll your eyes at me, dear viewer. Viewers.
I think it makes perfect sense. The best way to get things going is to get things going. There you go, my friends. Thank you so much.
Very verbose.
I loved it. I love it. I look forward to the same energy for future talks. And if there are listeners or content creators that would like to take part in this podcast, please let me know, and we'll talk and I'll share, you know, let's have a good time. This world is too serious already. Let's have some fun.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Auth.
Thank you so much, Lex. You're an amazing person.
You've made this a wonderful episode, and I look forward to the next.
Thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen and my friends, thank you for being here. I know that this is a tough year for us and we've barely gotten over the last one, but remember to eat your food, take your meds, stay hydrated, and be exceptionally kind to yourself.
Yes.
I love you very much. I will see you in the next episode. Goodbye.
Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye.